Easter weekend 1976, and it's the 10th anniversary of Santapod Raceway. And to commemorate this anniversary, Santapod have put on the first 8-car pro-fuel dragster field ever seen outside the United States. But the really big news is the fact that they've brought over the man, the quickest and fastest man in the world, Big Daddy Don Garlitz, to run here this weekend. And this has caused so much interest in pro-fuel dragsters again that Clive Skilton has brought the Revolution 3 car back out, running the Donovan from his funny car. Dennis Priddle's even considered running the funny car without the body and turning it into a dragster, especially for the weekend. And Santapod themselves have brought out the brand new fueler, the Asphalt Alligator, to be driven by Alan Herridge. With Tony Froome's new car, the Sundowner, Jerry Andrews' Hemi Hunter, Ronnie Picardo's Firefly, and Owen Haywood's Hound Dog, we've got a full 8-car field here, and it promises to be the meanest pro-fuel drag racing ever in this country. Over 50,000 spectators, 220 competitors have made their way up here, and from what we can see, we have got the making of the biggest and best drag racing ever in this country. Coming down the fire-up road now for his first qualifying pass here on Sunday, Big Daddy Don Garlitz, the fastest and quickest man in the world, brought over here by Santapod specially for this Spring Nationals meeting. And it looks as though Clive Skilton's coming down to run against him. This is a first for Skilton. Skilton coming down now to make a side-by-side qualifying pass with Garlitz. Skilton's stolen the march on everybody else here, being the first man to run against Garlitz this weekend. Skilton's reappeared in the top fuel, borrowing the Revolution 3 car that he sold to Trevor Young and dropping his Donovan from the funny car into it. He's just pulling down now, going into the left-hand lane. Garlitz is already into the right-hand lane. The engine hasn't been running as well as it should be, and he's had an awful lot of problems with it. He's had the motor down two or three times, putting in new valves, new pistons, and new valve guides. Garlitz burns out first. Skilton burns out second. I'm not so sure whether Garlitz will be that pleased to be running side by side, because he likes to keep his aces up his sleeve when he's qualifying. But another first for Skilton. Although it's only qualifying, I'm sure Skilton's going to treat this like a race, because there'll be a great psychological advantage if he can get there in front of Garlitz. Both cars just pushing back down. From Skilton's point of view, this must be a hell for leather run. From Garlitz, perhaps he's just checking the car out. It's going to be very interesting. And Skilton gets there first with 6.55 at 215. Garlitz, 6.96 at 201.
Clive, your car's run quicker this weekend than ever before. In a word, why?
Well, basically because it's got the most powerful engine in it it's ever had. The engine in there now is the Donovan, which is out of the funny car. The last couple of meets last year, we put a quarter stroke a crank in there, and the funny car went 689, I believe, with that crank in it. And therefore, we've sort of had more experience with the engine. We must have done about half a dozen runs or so on it, and it's going quicker every run. The only problem we've got is the cylinder heads are all season old, and they're cracked pretty badly, so that's the only thing we're sweating on. We're having to run the engine dry. We can't put water in it. We've also changed the chassis of the car. We've moved the driver out from the engine to change the weight transfer somewhat, but it's still far from ideal because the engine is stuffed right back into the axle. There's no two-speed, it's a high-gear car. Really, the engine should be maybe another 20 inches further out from the axle, and the front wheels brought back closer to the driver. But there you go, you could do all that work and go slower, so don't ask me, the old girl's going like a bomb.
Why have you changed back to the fueler again?
Well, it's a fueler race. It's not my car. This belongs to Trevor Young, and he's been kind enough just to lend it to me for this weekend. And I've got a new funny car, I'll be here in about 14 days.
Well, you decided perhaps to have a go at Don Garlitz?
Absolutely, it was a lifetime ambition, you know, to race the man, and all week we've been talking about it, that in qualifying we'd wait for him to come out and we'd go against him, be the first ever British car, because I figured the only time to beat him would be his first sort of competitive run before he really got dialed in, and we were really ready for him, and it was an honour to race against him, and I wanted to do it. I wanted some photographs for the mantelpiece.
How do you think you'll fare in competition?
Well, I hate making predictions because it's not really lucky to do so, but again, we were sort of bench racing during the week, and I fancied that anybody who is consistent, I mean there are cars that go 620s and suddenly they go 680 and 670, anybody who can rip up about 4 630s on the row, I think will stand a good chance if they can leave well on the lights. Garlitz races Crane first round. I would fancy that both of them figure it to be a hard race because Garlitz has got number one qualifier first. Therefore, I think they're going to have to lean on the motors. Now, I race the winner of either of those two, providing we win our round, first round successfully. I'm hoping that maybe they'll do enough damage to slow them up a bit for the second round.
What goes through your mind when you're down on the line just before a run?
Well, basically, you don't worry about anybody else or anything else. You're worried about, one, the condition of the motor and it sounding good. I mean, if the motor sounds good, you feel good and you drive good. If the motor is a bit suspect, then you start to worry, you come off of edge, then you start to make a mess of it all. So the first thing, the first worry, I suppose, is make sure the engine's running good, do the burnout. And then when you stage the car, it's just you. You're not worried about the other guy. If you start worrying about him, then you've lost. You've just got to do your thing and do it right.
Does the power of the car ever scare you?
No. Not sort of blowing trumpets. I've not been frightened by the horsepower. I've been frightened by cars doing things that they shouldn't be doing, but I've never been frightened by the horsepower.
Clive Skelton, thank you.
The most notable absentee from Pro Fuel is Dennis Priddle, who's still the quickest man in the country, although now only running in funny car.
There was a story going around the pits that you were thinking of taking off the body from the funny car, running the chassis in the top dragster section, just to have a go at Don Garlitz. Is this true?
Yeah, it was true.
I did consider it, but I had to do it right. You know, there was quite a lot of modifications I had to make for it. Plus, I would have wanted to have tried the cars, not at a meeting, and taking the car out to, say, a local airfield just to see if it would handle, because, you know, that is a completely unknown quantity. And I just ran out of time, and I wasn't prepared to come up and do it unless I did the job properly.
What are your feelings about Don Garlitz?
What can you say? It's all been said. You know, he is Mr. Drag Racing. A lot of people are saying, oh, you know, where's his fantastic times? I've seen the guy run in the States before. You know, I think when the time comes, he'll live up to expectations. He's brilliant.
In funny car, you've got eight cars. What do you reckon is going to be the main competition for you?
Well, obviously, the car I fear most of all at this meeting is Hound Dog. It's proved to be a very, very quick car. Alan could run quickly, but it's an unknown quantity. The other car I think that could go very, very well is Liam Churchill. But, you know, they're all strong runners, you know. Peter Barnett is a very, very capable driver. The car is a fairly good car. Who else have we got? Well, Roland Pratt. Roland Pratt has proved his ability on many occasions. I've had a lot of really tight races when I've been running my big engine, and today I'm only running my small engine. But we've got a lot of work to do on the car. The car's not running as I would like it at this point. But, you know, at the end of the day, we'll probably tell a different tale, I hope.
What do you hope to put down as the first qualifying time?
It's a very good question. I would like to run as near 7 flat as possible. We ran the car at Snetterton on Friday, had a few problems with it, and the best I could squeeze out of it there was a 7.4. But the engine certainly wasn't working right. We've changed quite a lot of parts on it, and we're hoping to get it going a little bit better. And this is just really a shakedown run, just to see what we can sort out. And back of the pits and probably do a little bit of work. Superstar Dennis Poodle, we're on the tow truck now as a funny car comes down the Fire Up Road, and the man's just been giving us his views on what the competition is going to be like here. First funny car run out today, and we're hoping to catch some of the action.
One of the most disappointed men here this weekend must be Dennis Priddle. It's always been his ambition to race against Garlitz, but without a fuel car now, he's just restricted to running purely in the funny car category. He even considered running the funny as a fueler by taking the body off, but there was no way it would work, he said. So he's just coming round to make his first qualifying pass for the funny car category. Dennis ran at Snetterton the last couple of days. He's running his smaller motor.
But it's the burnout occasion. You've got a trumpet and a really good burnout. Get the crowd behind you. First time the body went down, I was really petrified. You can't hear the engine, you know, but you can't hear the exhaust so well. All you hear is the clattering of the engine, and you think your engine's just about to fall to pieces. It's getting used to the fact when you do a burnout in a funny car, and the valves float, the old engine's going through hell. You know, you can hear it all happening, you know.
Priddle just getting ready for his first qualifying pass. Just easing up into the staging lights. Should be one of the top runners in the funny car category this weekend. Revs going up. Ready to roll. A good straight long pass from Dennis Priddle, sounding really strong as it goes across the top end. Time of 6.9 seconds. The big bad pro stoppers have always been great crowd pleasers here at Santa Pod. And the top man in this class is at present Gary Goggin, who for the last 2 years has been trying to break into the magic 9-second bracket. With the rebuilt engine and modified chassis is now running, he's an obvious favourite for this weekend's eliminations. Two stockers burning out there, Tony Dixon burning out back in the bleach box and Goggin burning out directly underneath us. Although two cars are making this run, probably all Pro Stock fans have got their eyes on Gary Goggin going for this magic nine. Tony Dixon's car just about ready, but Goggin looks as though he's killed the motor. Could have some problems out there. Doesn't look too happy. He's getting out of the car, taking his helmet off. He obviously won't make this run. Dixon looks as though he's going on a solo pass. Tony Dixon just pulling up into stage. Just building the revs up. Ready to go. Solo run there from Tony Dixon, just trying to improve his time. Coming down the tens very, very gradually, taking his time and dialing the motor in.
Tell us about today's eliminations.
Well, the car, we just rebuilt the new motor, and obviously we gave it some easy runs. We ran at Snetterton, ran a 10.3, ran a 10.4 here, and things were going quite well. Each time we checked out the valve gear, we checked out ignition timing, retarded the ignition, looking for a bit more top end because it had plenty of torque. The motor was really running strong. However, we tuned it and we were going to run it on the ragged edge, as it were. and I was going to drive it that way because we were looking for this Invincible 9. There's no way you'll run a 9 second, even if the car's capable of it, without running it like there was no tomorrow. Well, with me, it so happens there is no tomorrow, because what has happened is we've dropped a valve. It's brought valve guides and parts of the head with it. It's all come out of the exhaust. But before it comes out of the exhausts, the headers, it transfers itself back up into the carb, into the plenum chamber, over the other side, as each piston fires and sucks alternately at high RPM. So you get fragments of valve traveling at enormous, fantastic speed across from one side of the head to the other, side of the engine to the other. So consequently, what happens is you don't just wreck one combustion chamber on one head, you end up, I've done it before, you wreck both heads. Pistons, all the pistons have had it. You're okay if you're lucky with the crank, rods, and possibly the block. Usually, if, you know, with bits of, and they're big valves, over 2 inches, rattling about in there at 8 grand plus, you're going to damage the bores as well, so it possibly even means re-sleeving the bore. If that was the case, you throw that block away, because for pro stock, there's no way that you would use that sort of an engine. I've got another block, but I got to take stock of the situation. Financially, I have no sponsor, so things are very critical. And what I'll have to do is, in the cool light of day, perhaps tomorrow morning, when the adrenaline has gone down and the atmosphere of drag racing and the strip has left me, one takes a practical look at the situation, and that's what I got to do. I got to take stock, because it's going to cost me £2,500-£3,000 to build the right sort of motor again, and there's no guarantee in drag racing that the same thing couldn't happen inside 4 or 5 runs.
£2,000-£3,000 for an engine is a fortune. That leaves the competition in pro stock obviously down to 4 men. Who do you think are likely to pick up the prizes tomorrow?
Without any shadow of a doubt, Tony's running very, what I would call, sensibly. He's no way running for a 9. He's doing what I did 2 years ago. He's improved his car tremendously. He's rebuilt the chassis. He's now, as I said, doing 2 years ago, he's going 10-6, 10-4, 10-3, 10-2, and he'll get down to the 10-0s. When he gets to the 10-0s, if he's there long enough, as I was, then that's when you've got to go for the 9. But no way, barring anything going wrong, should the winner be anyone but Tony Dixon. His car is what I'd term the most sophisticated. He's running it sensibly. He's keeping the R's within reasonable limits. I think he's probably using a rev limit of about 7 grand, whereas I'm looking to shift at 8.5. So that's the difference between going for a 9 and winning race meetings, perhaps.
You sounded very sick, obviously. Well, when you've blown 2 or 3 grand worth of engine, no one can be pleased.
No.
But you sounded as though this perhaps could be curtains to drag racing for you.
Possibly. I don't know, I'll be honest with you. The winter time is always a negative time, I find, in drag racing. The weather's cold, the money's hard to come by. You take stock of the previous season. You never make money in this business anyway. You reluctantly approach the new season. I found this particular year, building the new motor, mentally it was a little bit of a struggle. I didn't look forward to the new season with, as I've done in previous years. I think what's happened is I've had 2 years, you know, I don't mean this in any sort of blowing my own trumpet way, but really I've had 2 years of problems and also a lack of competition ET wise. In other words, there was no one that was I could look at that I'd have to watch myself on the lights or whatever and be real sharp. And that's drag racing. Without that, the adrenaline doesn't get you. You don't go trundling home and ripping the motor apart to try and get another tenth out of it. And that's what I think you need. I only had this one thing, which is why I went out and ran hard as I did today, a 9. That's why I wasn't racing the other guy. To me, a 9 second was my only competition.
And now it appears the competition has disappeared in as many pieces as perhaps your valve train is.
Right. We'll have to see, to be honest. As I say, well, I'll just have a good long think about it. I would like to build another motor. The car is so right now. I tuned the chassis today with the traction compound that they put on the strip. You know, it's phenomenal out there. I'd say it's you know, I'm proud to say that it's as good as stateside. I was really confident that with the car the way it was, that if everything had held together, there was a 9 there. The 10-2 I did, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I shifted late into third gear, and for a second, if you know what I mean, in terms of acceleration, at top RPM, it sort of flattened out a little bit. When I say a second, I meant that in an expression, probably for perhaps 0.2 of a second. Well, if I did a 10-2, I felt that was a 10-0. You know, I've done so many 10-0s that I know what a 10-0 feels like. You know, it sounds silly, but I felt just a little bit harder launch, which I was capable of doing, because the last launch, when I did the 10-2, wasn't... It was around the 7 grand, but I've done harder. And just heat those tires a bit more, which is the reason you've got to do that radical sort of burnout. Get them really hot. But there we are. The car is right. If God willing and spirit willing, I'd like to put another motor in it and come back out here and do it again.
Coming down the far up road for their final qualifying pass, Peter Crane in the Stormbringer and Alan Herridge in the brand new Asphalt Alligator. Crane's had a disappointing season so far. Got into the very low sixes with a 6-1 last year, but he's been in the mid-sixes so far this season. Alan Herridge in what really is an unknown quantity, a brand new car debuted here at this meeting. Crane is now in his second year as a dragster driver, and he's got a lot of work to do to get back to the standard he made last year. Alan Herridge, well, Bootsy is the boy who's the king of the fuelers, so the Santa Pod team tell us. If the car is built, he can handle it, but we don't know how the Alligator is going to perform this weekend. In the sixes already, but he's going to have to get in the low sixes to be really competitive. Both engines are maintained by Roy Phelps of Santa Pod. They both sound very strong. Harris is already burnt out, and so is Crane. Crane's best so far has really been a mid-six, and Alan Herridge, although he's in reasonably good numbers, will probably want to qualify on top. Crescent Clive Skilton sitting up there with his reintroduced Revolution 3. Skilton on top of the pile with 6.36 so far. And both these two must be aiming to qualify higher. Staging area. Tyres hot and sticky, and the engine's ready to roll. Both staged. Crane's time, 6.21, qualifying him top, and Herridge, 6.31, the fastest for that car, qualifying second.
As we come to the end of the evening, at about 7:10, Peter Crane has just laid down an amazing pass of 6.21 to take him to the top of the pile. Peter, are you pleased about this?
Yeah, I'm really elated about it. So, you know, we were really hoping for this, and we ran a 6.5 earlier on. I thought, you know, the layoff since last year, you know, we're back to square one, but... hopefully now, we're on the way up again.
What have you done different to the car to drop the time by 0.3 of a second?
Oh, there's a little minor adjustment.
No secrets, obviously, there.
Oh, no. Just general adjustment.
How do you feel about the rest of the competition here this weekend?
It's very stiff. It really is, you know. But I think Alan Herridge is probably, you know, the next guy, then followed by Clive Skilton, who's come from nowhere in Revolution 3 with his funny car engine. He's run his best ever. And Owen Hayward. And then after that, who knows?
As a relatively inexperienced pro fuel driver, you've only been in it for a couple of years. How does it feel to be sitting on top of all these really experienced guys?
Oh, well, it's really good. And actually, this is just my second season. And, I couldn't have hoped for a better one. You know, all the way through, things have just gone right, which is a different story to my previous car. Nothing went right.
How do you think you'll fare in the eliminations tomorrow?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say. You know, I just get out there and give it my best and hope that's good enough.
As Crane hit 6.21, Alan Herridge, running the new Asphalt Alligator, ran his best ever time of 6.31 to qualify second.
Was it a nervous situation trying to do a full pass on a brand new car?
Well, not being beginning, but no, not really, because I helped build the car with Bob and Roy Phelps. We built it up between the three of us. And basically, I think any drag racer, provided he's got confidence in himself, he'll drive it.
What is the car's potential?
Well, I was hoping to have done the low time today. I think it'd be low sixes, but to get in the fives, you've got to work hard at it, really hard.
How do you feel about racing Big Daddy, possibly tomorrow?
I would love it. I'm just upset that I weren't the first qualifier to have the chance to go in first time. On the cars, it looks now, he's going to get knocked out first round.
After the race, we managed to get an exclusive interview with Don Garlitz in his hotel room. As he's been driving for so long, we asked him how drag racing first got started.
Well, it was a long time ago, for one thing. 1950. I was just out of high school, just a kid, you know, 18 years old, and had a car, a little Ford coupe. Used to drive it. You know, I love to work on cars. Always have been kind of mechanically inclined, and used to do things to the engine to, you know, make it faster. And we just kind of started street racing and ended up with official drag racing. That was, we got a old Air Force training runway, World War II vintage, and they let us use it. The city fathers let us use it to practice once a month on, and that was drag racing. That's how I got started.
What were you doing for a living at that time?
I worked in a body and paint shop for, you know, repairing automobiles.
How long before you managed to get sore? How long before you managed to turn pro?
Well, that was in 1950. In 1957 and 58, right at about the change of the year, was when I went professional. By that I mean that's when I first got paid to race and actually raced for purses that, you know, paid well.
What was the first class that you ran in?
It was, in the very first, when we went to drive, it was divided into two classes. One were where the roadsters and cut-down coupes ran, and then the one would be where they were total street machines, and I was in the street machines.
Did you evolve the drag racer yourself, or did you just follow a trend?
Well, I wasn't the first one to have a dragster. By that we mean a chassis and transmission and engine and rear. In California they had them about a year, and we'd seen pictures of them, but I was the first one built one in Florida.
What was the engine in that machine?
It was a 1948 Ford flathead, 4 ounce.
How long did you run that car for?
Well, it was built in 1954, and we ran it to about 1956.
And what did you graduate to from then?
We built a chassis from a set of 1931 Chevy frame rails and put a Chrysler hemispherical engine in it, and that was the car that eventually set the record in 1957 of 176 miles an hour.
Now, you've had a series of firsts in terms of elapsed times throughout your career. Could you give us a rundown of those?
Well, it'd really be very difficult just off the top of my head, but I wasn't the first guy into the eights. I was the second car into the eight, second bracket, and the first car to run more than once under 9 seconds. There had been one 8-second run when I went 8.79, and then later 8.98, 8.95, and 8.94. So I was first officially in the eights. I was first car over 170 miles an hour, first car over 180 miles an hour, first car over 190, and the first car over 200. And then the first car over 240 and the first car over 250 officially. There was one unofficial 250 run, which everyone is well aware of didn't really happen, but it got called off on the clocks before it could be stopped. But when the record was set at 250, I did it. I wasn't the first one into the fives, nor the sixes, but I was the first into the sevens. We went 788. And then they beat me to the sixes. And they, in fact, I was late getting into the sixes. That's where I vowed I would not shave until I ran six. And my beard was hanging down to my waist, and I still hadn't ran six. Not really, but that's what they were saying.
Now, it seems that a lot of the fuel pilots in the States have at some time or other dabbled in the funny car class. You've never really gone in for this. Could I ask you why?
I don't care for them. I think a race car, a pure race car, should be pure and simple and no adornment on it. Everything on my car is functional. And a funny car, the body performs no function whatsoever to get it from point A to point B. It's merely so that it looks like a Dodge or a Chevelle or something like that. It looks like it's nothing near like a Dodge or a Chevelle or a Ford Pinto or a Mustang. It's just that the car is adorned with this plastic body to appease two groups. First of all, the sponsors. It gives large sign space. And second of all, the spectator who thinks his Pinto or his Mustang is doing some great thing. So he comes to the race so he can associate with this car, which is in effect not like his car, but he evidently doesn't realize it sitting in the stands. And I contend that what difference does it make what kind of car it is? It's the man and the machine is what makes the difference. And in other words, I have an old saying that goes back a long ways for me in drag racing. It's thus, that I would rather lose than go faster. In other words, I want to go as fast as I can possibly go on any given day. And if I have to be beaten because I'm in a tough class, I'm going to be in a faster class. So there's only one class in drag racing appeals to me, and that's Top Fuel, because that is the fastest and the ultimate. And if I got beat every weekend, I'd still be running a fueler, because I wouldn't go back to a funny if I could win every weekend, because I'd have to slow down to go back to a funny. I would not go into a class to win or to appease the manufacturers, the sponsors, or the spectators. I go out to the race to go fast.
As far as sponsors are concerned, when did you first get sponsored by any major manufacturer?
By that you mean actually put their name on the car and they gave me sponsorship money which I could buy race car parts with. That would be the Wynn Oil Company, and I've been with them 12 years now. So 12 from 1976 takes us back about 1964. That would have been it when we put Wynn's Charger, because in 1963 the car was a swamp rat.
It's always very difficult for people in Britain to get sponsorship, and this has often caused a rather sparse field in terms of some of the really top performing cars. How difficult is it to get in the States?
Well, that ought to give you an idea. I set the record in 1957, first me in over 176, and in 1964, just 7 short years later, I got a $1,000 a year sponsor.
It took that long?
That's exactly right. And everyone comes up to me and says, how do I get a sponsor? Well, do good for 5 or 6 years, you'll get a sponsor.
I don't know whether this will be a little bit controversial, but we've read in Hot Rod and things like this that you have announced your retirement. Is this so?
That's true. This being here is part of it. I'm here on a relaxed weekend, supposed to be relaxed, and I have other commitments similar to this. I'm not racing any national events back in the States of the National Hot Rod Association. I'm racing a few of the International Hot Rod Association, which are paying me very well, and in some match races around that. There's just a lot of things that I wish to do before I'm too old to enjoy them. And traveling around is one of them. I'm working on some antique cars, some restorations. I truly love antique cars. And just all of this stuff is some of the things I want to do. In other words, I'm not, I don't think you could call it quitting. I mean, I've been drag racing 25 years, but I'm just slowing down a little bit.
Getting over to England now, it's 12 years since you were last on this side of the water. Would you give us your feelings on England as it is now in the drag racing sense?
Well, it's just about like the United States. Like I said, a little while ago on the PA, the only difference that I can see just straight away is that the they don't have quite the backup parts. In other words, each team doesn't have two and three spare motors and tons of spare parts and all kinds of tools and trailers with air compressors in them, but their basic cars are virtually exactly the same. You could swap pistons and all, and piston and rod assemblies right back and forth. And the performance of the cars at this event certainly says that they are right up to par. You take these cars over to the United States, I wouldn't mind, I'd grab any one of about three of them out there and load them right in my trailer and hook up my spare pieces and go right racing. You would paint them black, you wouldn't know the difference.
April the 19th, the final day of Santa Pod's 10th anniversary Spring Nationals, and probably the biggest ever crowd to assemble at a UK drag race meeting is here. The weather is perfect and everything is set to see the hottest pro fuel racing outside the States. Qualifying's now finished and the draw for the first round of the pro fuel category is Alan Herridge, who qualified second, against Ronnie Picardo, qualified sixth. Owen Haywood, who qualified fourth, against Tony Froome, who qualified eighth. Clive Skilton, who qualified third, against Hemi Hunter, who qualified seventh. Hemi Hunter driven by Jerry Andrews. And the final race is top qualifier Peter Crane against the man, Big Daddy Don Garlitz. Coming down the far up road now, the first round, the first pairing of pro fuel dragster here this weekend. The two Santa Pod cars are paired together. Ron Picardo in the front-ended surfboard Firefly, and the brand new car from the Santa Pod stable, the Ashfelt Alligator, driven by Bootsy Herridge. Only the fourth run the Alligator has made in its life, and already Herridge is firmly entrenched in the sixes. Qualified second, as opposed to Ronnie Picardo, who qualified down the pole sixth. Obviously the favourite for this race could be Herridge, but with a brand new car, we could well see an upset. Ronnie Picardo desperately trying to get the car into the sixes, the Firefly car. He may well be lucky here at the meeting. The traction compound's given us some excellent times. The grip is very, very good out there. And we're hoping for some record times later on. Picardo's pulling into the left-hand lane. Alan Herridge going into the right-hand lane. Both crews getting the traction compound down, ready to burn out. Picardo especially is going to need all the traction he can get. First burnout to Picardo. Herridge follows. Both cars just being pushed back into stage now. The tension on the line is electric. Alan Herridge is expected to do oh so well because of his previous record. But the car is really an untried quantity. They've had some handling problems earlier, and if they've cured these, then Herridge could well be a force to be reckoned with. On paper, Picardo doesn't have that much of a chance, but he's a game little fella, and if there's any chance he's going, he may well take them. Both cars being pushed back now into the staging area. Picardo's obviously loaded the motor a little to try and get better time. It's sounding very, very lumpy out there. Herridge, well, no one knows what percentage he's running. He's already hit a 6.3 in his Millerton engine drill. 8 litres of power there for Herridge, as opposed to the 7.5 litres Picardo's carrying. He's staying there. Herridge goes through with a time of 6.29 at 215 miles an hour. This is it, the last pairing in the first round of Pro Fuel here this Easter weekend, and this is the biggie. Big Daddy Don Garlitz, all the way from Florida in the King Rat Fueler, running up against the fastest qualifier here this weekend, Peter Crane in the Stormbringer. Garlitz has been here for 3 days now, and the motor's been sick all the time. He's been thrashing on it all over the weekend, and the big question is, has he got it running right? Crane certainly got his car running right. Finished top of the pile with a 6.2 blast yesterday. Everything seems to be going for Crane, but we wonder whether it's happening for Garlitz. There's not an inch of space down by the rails. Every single spectator here is pressing up trying to get a view of this historic race. The first time Garlitz is running competition here in England. And Peter Crane, the boy from Orpington, only his second year as a fuel pilot, is the man he's running up against. We've all been hoping for a five here at Santa Pod, and one of these two men could be the guys who are going to hit this magic five-second bracket. Three cars through in the semi-finals. The winner of this race will come up against Clive Skelton in the semis. Garlitz burns first. Crane second. As they're pushing back into stays, there must be an awful lot of things going through Peter Crane's mind. Not only is he trying to win the major trophy here, he's trying to get into the fives, but the biggest obstacle in his path is the man of all time, Big Daddy. As far as experience goes, well, Garlitz has been driving these cars for nearly 25 years. Crane's only been in his second year as a fuel pilot. Car's being pushed back into the staging area now. Okay, the load's on Garlitz's shoulders because he hasn't really hit a good time in this country this weekend. But the onus on Crane must be tremendous out there. I've never seen such tension on a dragline strip as the lights go on. They're both staged. Red's building up. Lights going down the tree. Green and Crane's hit a hole shot. He's out in front of Garlitz, and Garlitz just ain't catching him. Crane's gone through. It's a five. 5.97 at 218 miles an hour.
Well, I was just going to give it my best shot and hope that I'd win. You know, no more than that.
Were you surprised when he pulled a red light?
I didn't know he pulled a red light. I just knew that he was behind me, and that's where I hoped he'd stay.
Getting on to the 5 second run, did you at any stage realise that it was quicker than you'd ever gone before?
No, I knew it was fast because the car was really shaking, you know, but you can't really tell. You know, I knew it was a good hard run, and you know, when I heard the news, it was really great.
The car got quite out of shape on that run, but still you kept your boot in. What was going through your mind at the time?
Well, just making sure I beat Big Daddy, you know.
How much help have the team given you on this?
Oh, a tremendous amount, and Roy Phelps, you know, preparing the motor, you know, made it all happen.
He's given the reputation as probably the best engine builder, or probably ranks with some of the top engine builders by now. How much help has he been to you?
Oh, fantastic help. You know, we couldn't run as strong as we do without him.
So, what do you think your next step will be now?
Well, we'll just be racing the rest of the season and, you know, go as hard as it takes to win.
As far as your own performance is concerned this weekend, what are your feelings about it?
Well, we had some sort of a severe problem. I haven't put my finger on it yet. And I had a long talk with Dennis Priddle a little while ago, and he seems to put a finger on it for me. He says, you know, he says that car's been over here for a couple, 3 months now. He says, what about the Magneto? I said, well, it's been right in it. He said, well, he says, you know, he says, when this meeting is over, he says, I take my mag out, put it in a plastic bag, and put those silica demoisturizers in there with it. He says, that's the only way I'm able to keep a mag. He says, I leave a mag in an engine over here a month. He says, the moisture gets to it, and he says, it won't fire properly. And, of course, this was my old problem. The mag was new when it left the States, but it was in the motor all that time. It came over on the boat, which is extreme moisture, which I never gave it any consideration. I didn't have any trouble in 64 when I came over, but it could have been a little different situation. We weren't leaning on the magnetos as hard then as we are now, and it obviously was a mag problem, because no matter what I did, nothing corrected. Every time we thought we had our finger on it, it still misfired on those cylinders. And it just almost, it hardly leaves only one thing, the mag. And I think Dennis Priddle hit it right on the head. He says, I think you'll find your mag is bad.
Did you go out knowing there was a problem today, knowing that you perhaps might get eliminated?
Well, I thought this morning when we fired it on the rollers that it was perfect. It was hitting on all eight cylinders, and of course that's the way a magneto reacts. As long as there's no load, everything is nice. It sounded excellent. I really felt I was going to beat Crane. I wasn't even the least bit worried about it. And I let the clutch out, and it practically stopped in its own tracks.
It appeared as though you hit a red light there. Did you in actual fact do so?
No, I didn't red light. I didn't try to leave on Crane. Crane actually was out ahead of me in the start. There was some sort of a malfunction between the system that is used here, which is a little bit different, and the way my car is set up, which interrupts the beams. That's what we call in the United States a technical red light. I was officially eliminated, but not because of a jump start. It was a technicality that interfered with the start, which would in fact have eliminated me whether I ran good or not. So it's hypothetical what would have happened, because what happened was I red lighted, and that's the way it would have been.
After 25 years at the top, do you feel any pressure that everybody's out to get you?
Well, yeah, you always feel that, but that doesn't bother me. They've been trying to get me for a long time, so it's no big thing.
What are your thoughts when you set off for a run?
Well, I think the primary thoughts in your mind after you've run as many times as I have is that it'll be a safe run. You're more concerned with the safety, I think, than you are the speed. Then if it's going to be a safe run, let it be a fast one.
Getting on to safety, after your unfortunate accident, you switched to a rear-motor car. Can you see any further developments in top fuel, any radical changes?
You'll have to talk to some of the younger drivers. It's time for them to come up with some new ideas. I'm relaxing. Let them young blokes figure it out. I'm waiting for them to come up with some new ideas. I've come up with... The Dragster, as you see it today, is virtually my development. Now, I'm going to have a rest. I want to be able to copy some of Peter Crane's ideas. I want him to go 255, and I'll come look at his car and see what to do to mine. Can you dig it?
People are always talking in awe of the amount of horsepower that a fueler turns out, and also probably the difficulty in handling. Is there any real danger in it if you know what you're doing?
I think that a top fuel dragster is the safest form of motor racing there is in the world. I'm talking about real motor racing where you go fast, you know, 150 plus. It's safer than a pro stock, it's safer than a funny car. There is a tremendous amount of horsepower. It's around between 2,000 and 2,500, depending upon how much nitromethane you use. But they are not difficult to handle. The proof of it is that we have that Shirley Maldoney in the United States. She drives one with no problem. And then you've got this Ross over here that drives one. They're not difficult to handle. They're easy cars to drive, but they are very safe.
Dennis Priddle is a great admirer of the safety routines in the States, the very comprehensive medical facilities. How dangerous is the sport over there? He seems to believe that because people are on a limited budget in this country, they perhaps take a little more care with their assembly. Would you say this was so?
Oh, I would certainly think so. I think the fellows here are much more conservative on the tuning of the end. This is not always because of the limited budget. I know guys that have got a lot less money in parts than the guys out here have got, but they blow the parts to bits. I think it's, they've been brought up that way. Over here, they started out limited budget. It's difficult to get parts. You just can't call Keith Black and have something in 48 hours at your doorstep. It's a good possibility if you break your parts here, you won't race for quite some time. It's not that way in the States. And plus, the guys they've looked all around them and they see everybody else. When they came into the sport, the guys were hand grenading the parts. And so now they just think that that's how it's done, and they don't know any different. I'm from the conservative school. I would much rather race under the conditions like here. I hate to blow the parts up. It's one of the things I dislike about drag racing in the United States.
This is the first semi-final of the Pro Fuel category here at Easton. We've had so much action in the first round of Pro Fuel. Garlick's going out the first five, but somehow the semis seem a little bit of a come down. Anyway, down the fire road comes Owen Haywood, who qualified in a non-event against Tony Froome. and Alan Herridge in the brand new Asphalt Alligator, who shut down Ronnie Picardo in the first round. Haywood coming down first, followed by Herridge. Herridge, this could be a motor car to set the pro fuel categories alight for the coming seasons. A brand new car, already in the sixth through. And as he comes past the yellow tyre, he's lost fire. Haywood's come round to stage, getting ready for his burnout. Herridge has lost fire and he's signalling to his crew to try and push him to restart it. Haywood's already done his first burnout and they're still pushing and shoving Alan Herridge's Asphalt Alligator. Really favourite to take this semi-final. And there's all so many problems down there. They're still trying to push it round to get it restarted. But time's against them. Haywood's coming back into stage, and as soon as he got into stage, they've only got 20 seconds to stage alongside him. It doesn't look like they're going to make it. Haywood's just coming back in. Haywood goes through in a by run, and Herridge is sitting there shaking his head. A race he should have had sewn up, and he just didn't even make the line.
Alan, what exactly happens?
Well, the basic problem was that the oil pressure never came up. And this is a tragedy of having to change the oil after every round. You get an airlock in the line, and you're such a short distance really to fire the car, to pump the oil up, so you get a reading, and then switch the motor on. I just ran out of road. As simple as that.
And you didn't really have time to back up and then get it pushed again?
Well, no, because what had happened, Owen had elected to go first, fire up first. So therefore, after he's fired and staged, you've only got 20 seconds to stage, and then he goes. If you don't make it in that time, you're out.
The second semi-final greeted with hysteria by the crowds. Clive Skilton, ageing superstar, makes good, putting the Donovan engine for the funny car into his old rail. And the man at the top of the pile, Peter 5 Second Crane. Skilton returned to the fuel ranks purely for this weekend, and Crane, the giant killer, the daddy killer. In the fives already, Crane. Skilton only managed the best of 6-3. So really, Crane should be through for an easy win to the final here. This could really make Peter Crane's weekend. Skilly's been consistent, but he just ain't got the pace in that motor car. Skilton pulling into the right-hand lane. Crane in the left-hand lane. All eyes on Crane, really. Can he back up his previous run to qualify the new strip record in the fives? Got to get in the very, very low sixes indeed to get closer, or hopefully get into the fives. Then he'll have a brand new strip record of 5.97. That engine sounds tasty. Oh, and the longest burnout in the pro fuel category from Peter Crane. Crowd pleasing Crane there on the first burnout. Skilly playing it cool. Crane being pushed back. Hits a short little burnout. Boy, has this man got problems. A 6-3 car against a 5.97 super top of the pile, Peter Crane. Skelly being pushed back into the right-hand lane. Crane must be feeling on top of the world. Skelly's got to use every ounce of his experience now as the car's pushing to stage. Skilton with 6.37. Crane gets in at 6.03, but it just ain't good enough to get him in the final.
What was going through your mind when you came up against Clive Skelton?
Well, I was, there was too many things going through my mind. That's why he beat me out of the light. I wasn't concentrating. That's the way it goes, but I'm pleased because it was a 6.0 and it clinched the record, it made it official. So if I lost, I lost. I can race Clive, you know, another time. And I'll give him my full attention this time. But I was on cloud 9 after running a 5.
Coming down the Fire Up Road now, the final of the first 8-car Pro Fuel Field ever held in Britain. Clive Skelton against Owen Haywood. Two surprise finalists here at the start of the meeting. I wouldn't have given much for their chances of being down on the line for the final. But Haywood's made it by shutting down Tony Froome and Alan Harridge. Skelton's made it by beating Jerry Andrews and the man of the meeting, Peter Crane. Probably the deciding factor here is going to be who goes into the right-hand lane, because the left one is covered in oil from Liam Churchill's car. But from the looks of it, Skelton has got the good lane on the right-hand side. So the odds must be against Owen Haywood. Skelton in the right-hand lane. And the key to his success has really been consistency. He's put into the old Revolution 3 chassis, the engine from his funny car, and just hit 6.3s as though they're going out of style. First burnout there from Clive Skelton. Haywood's had engine problems, he's now also running the engine from his funny car. Haywood not burnt out yet, traction compound going down. Burns out. Skelton being pushed back in, Haywood being pushed back in. There's smoke and flames coming from Clive Skelton's headers. That engine's worked very, very hard for him this weekend. Haywood have got all the odds against him. He's got the bad lane, although the car's running well. Skelton in top form, his experience showing. He's been very, very quick from the line. Reading the lights very, very well, and his engine's been running very strong. Perhaps for the first time, Skelton could probably be favourite for this race. Both pushing into stage. In the staging beams. The money run coming, and Skelton hit another hole shot. Gaining on him, but he's just not going to get there. Skelton goes through. Skelton takes it with 6.37. Haywood's best ever time of 6.30, but it's just not good enough.
Clive, did you think that you had good chances of winning it?
Well, you know, we did a lot of bench racing, as they call it, before the event all this week, what we were going to do and what we weren't going to do, and the tactics were to get out against Garlitz in qualifying, you know, even get beaten, but get over the nerves of actually coming up against the man. Well, of course, when we beat him in qualifying, 6.50 against the 6.90, you know, there was no stopping us. We were full of confidence. The other thing that I knew would win the race would be consistency. I've seen it too many times in the States. Qualifying, you know, it really gets big time, and you get all these cars running fives, but the races are often won by cars running consistent 6.2s all day long or whatever. And that car went out and ran 6.30 on the trot, last qualifying run, all the elimination runs, except for the one where I led off against the Stones, because we felt, you know, that we had that one reasonably easy. But it ran 6.30 every time. All you have to do is get a real good leave. And that's what we did with Crane, and we put Crane away. That was the way to do it.
When you came up against Crane, obviously he was on top of the moon. Did you think that he would be overconfident, or did you think that he might trap you into the dust?
I felt absolutely confident. There's no question about it. People were coming up in the pits and saying, oh, what are we going to do now, you know, the mechanic? I said, no way, we've got him, you know? Because two things, when you run a 650 on a car, it works hard, you know? I didn't know whether he did any damage or not, but he did take the car down, so he thought he'd done some damage. That was number one. Number two, right, I've just run a 6.30, he's run a 5.90. He's going to sleep on the line, wait for a good green and go. I mean, I would do the same, so I was banking on that. I didn't even see the green light. I was gone on that amber, and I was away, you know, and that was the only way to win that race. If I'd have got a red, who cares, you know? Because if I'd have had an even race with a guy, I'd have got beat. So the thing to do was to get away. So I wasn't worried at all. Maybe I should have been. I think maybe you get all psyched up. You get all sort of... You either get on top of the world, or you really get down in the dumps in this game. And I'm a guy with a fairly even sort of temperament. But I was really, ever since we came off the trailer and ran a 650, we didn't expect that old girl to go any quicker than 650 in its life. 60s I'd been happy with. And we ran the car so easy, weren't leaning on it, and it ran a 650. From then on, we just knew we were in there, you know?
So for the first time in British competition, obviously tactics have played a major part because you've had an eight-car field. Your experience was obviously invaluable.
Yeah, it certainly was. You know, I mean, what I learned in the States running in 16, I ran in a 32-car field once. Absolutely invaluable. No way did I figure on being number one qualifier. I wanted to qualify about eight or four, you know, so I either ran against number eight. All week we're saying, well, we've got an old car, we'll sort of qualify down, well down the field on purpose. Half past three yesterday afternoon, we were number one qualifier and Garlitz was five, which meant we had Garlitz first round, you know, and I thought, God, you know, this is terrible. I didn't know what to do. And thank God, Cranen came out and ran a 6.20 and Herries ran a 6.30, put me number three, and that was just great. That was just where I wanted to be. Three or four, that was just where I wanted to be. Everything went our way. It was really a good weekend.
So your return to Fuelers has obviously been a storybook ending. Mm. Will we see you in Fuelers again, or was it just one-off shot?
Well, this was a one-off shot. That engine's got to go in the new Vauxhall Cavalier funny car in the next 14 days. I would love to have a fuel car, but it means money, and the funny cars attract the sponsors. So that's the problem. If I could get a sponsor or somebody want to come in with me on a deal, anybody listening to this wants to come in partnership with me and run a fuel car, I want to drive the car, of course, but I'll put a motor in it or whatever and go pro fuel racing. Trevor said I can borrow the car any time if I want to put the Donovan in it, so maybe that's what we might do this year. If the money's up, we'll be out after it. But otherwise, we should be running the funny car.
So if anyone wants to set up in a double-A dragster, with your experience and the winner of the first eight-car field, you're the man to bait.
Yeah, sure, you know, I just love it. I mean, I like them better than the funny cars, there's no question about it. They are more fun, they're more engineering, and there's more skill, I feel, in a fueler. I would imagine with a funny car, there's more driver ability, so I wouldn't take that from anybody. That's more difficult to drive. Maybe that's why I enjoy the fuelers more, of course, getting an old man.
Well, if the old man in the States, Don Garlitz, keeps winning, you probably will as well.
Well, on his reckoning, I've got 10 years to go.
We hope you keep winning for 10 years.